I come from rural Ireland. I was brought up in a family of 17 children and with great values. My mother was a very good woman and always instilled in us the importance of life, as you can see, with 17 children of her own. And as I was growing up, my father, I suppose, to deter us girls from, you know, going astray in the world, my father was always say, you know, when you go out into the world, please don't ever get pregnant. Don't bring shame on the family. So I suppose that those words would resonate in my heart always. So I immigrated to England when I was about 19 and had been brought up very strictly. And I suppose this newfound freedom was all very much new to me. I began to experiment with alcohol. I began to be, you know, meet boys. And then the end result of this was I became pregnant. And I was absolutely terrified. I suppose when I think of my abortion, the one word that comes to mind is fear. I suppose I had fear of losing control of my life. I had a very good job in London. I was working in an office as a secretary. And I had a good social life. And I suppose the main and contributing factor was that the fear of never being able to return home again, living in London and thinking in my, you know, I suppose in that time of crisis, that thinking of my father's words, don't ever bring shame, would mean that I couldn't go home again if I was pregnant or had a child out of wedlock. So I was imprisoned with fear, I suppose, fear of losing control of my life, as I said. And the aftermath of abortion, I must add, continues to imprison one in fear. So I remember being very sick for a long time and very nauseous, and eventually, I suppose, ending up in hospital because of that dehydration, and for the first time, my pregnancy being confirmed by the doctor. And I remember the doctor asking me how I was, and I was quite upset and hysterical, saying, I can't be pregnant, you know, I don't want to be pregnant, I'd rather be dead. I don't want to live anymore, I'll never be able to return home. I was, you know, so distraught at that time, in that time of my life, that I believe that the reason for my abortion was I was suicidal. But I do know today, and indeed, meeting with other young women who come through the weekends that I facilitate, they would tell me the very same thing, that at that time, many of them would say, I would have said anything. I would have said I'm suicidal to get what I wanted at that time. I was in such a desperate situation. So I suppose the following morning, the young doctor didn't explain anything to me about the risks or dangers of induced abortion. The word baby was never mentioned. I was told it was a very simple procedure and it would be all over very quickly. And with that, without further ado, the following morning, I was wheeled down to the room where the abortion was done. It was in a hospital in London. And I still, to this day, remember the face of the anaesthetist peering into my face and assuring me that it would be all over very quickly. So it wasn't all over very quickly, I have to tell you, because I still have the scar to prove it today. And, you know, in the times that we're living right now in Ireland, I have never shared this part publicly before because probably there was still a little bit of shame that it would have been, it was so awful, my abortion experience. I had a procedure done called a hysterotomy. I don't think they do it anymore. They literally open your abdomen and take your baby out. So I must have been fairly far along in my pregnancy at that time. But I think God in his great mercy has prevented me from remembering exactly how far along, because I do remember the young doctor saying how far along I was. But to this day, I cannot remember how many weeks pregnant I was. So without further ado, I was wheeled into the room or the ward where this procedure was done. And the next thing I knew was I woke up, and I was quite upset when I woke up. I remember being very, very upset, and they were trying to calm me down. And I often think today that perhaps the enormity of what had happened somewhere in my subconscious must have realized, you know, that this something big and major had happened in my life. And I remember when I came round trying to sit up in bed, and I couldn't because it hurt so bad. And I thought, what's happening here? And I remember feeling my abdomen and realizing that I actually had stitches all up the front of my abdomen. So I was quite upset by this, and I would honestly say that my life was never the same again. You know, I was told it was a simple procedure, that there was nothing there, it would all over be over very quickly, but I was a very naive young woman from Ireland, knowing very little about just knowing a bit about the facts of life and not probably even realizing there was such a thing as an abortion prior to this, you know, that there was such a procedure being done. So I remember that there was a dreadful sense of loneliness and isolation when I came through, a sense of being so alone, so far away from my family and not being able to share it with anyone. And I suppose after that, soon afterwards, when I came home, I remember the severe depression, the self-hatred, the panic attacks, the low self-esteem. And I think it was like a television screen in front of my face, morning, noon, night, seeing and realizing what had happened, and then realizing there was a little heart beating under my heart at that time. And now that little heart was stopped. And, you know, I often say you can take the baby out of your womb, but you can never, ever take it out of your heart. To begin with, I must say there was relief. My problem was gone. My family would never find out. But then, so very soon, I began to have very bad nightmares. And in this particular nightmare, there was this beautiful baby always in front of me, and I was always trying to catch this beautiful baby, but of course it was always out of my reach. And I remember I began to drink heavily at that time, because in my naivety, I suppose, I thought that somehow I could bring that baby back into my womb. And I think later on down the road, I think it was the lies that affected me the most. You know, the first lies, there's nothing there. And of course, it's easier to dispose of an unwanted pregnancy if you can promote that lie that there's nothing there. And I often say that the best witnesses to the humanity of unborn children are not scientists, but like women like myself who weep and mourn for our children. We're not mourning for a bunch of cells. We're mourning for our children. And I suppose the second big lie is that you move on unaffected. Abortion changed my whole life. You know, I was left with an empty womb and a broken heart. I can honestly say that today. My fear was replaced by regret, guilt, shame and anger. I was angry, I suppose, that no one told me that there was, as I said, a little heart beating under my heart at 21 days. Angry that no one offered me a different solution to my situation. I was angry that no one informed me of the risks and dangers of both physical and psychological of abortion. And I suppose I often think today that there's a bond, and I often say it when I share my story, there's a bond between a mother and her child that abortion can never destroy. You know, and no one ever told me at that time that in the special events of my living children's lives, like a first birthday, the first steps, the first words, the first day at school, I would forever ever remember the one that would never celebrate a birthday or never take a first step, never say a first word, and never ever have a first day at school. And, you know, with abortion, there's no focus for that grief that you carry, that pain that you carry in your heart, that sense of longing, of emptiness, a space, as I say in my heart, that nothing can ever fill. There's no body to bury. There's no gravesite to visit. No sympathy cards from your family and friends. You know, the list is endless. The list of the feelings that I experienced, the pain, the grief, the shame. And I suppose the only way I could cope as time went on was to go into denial. You know, I had to deny everything to get on with my life. And I think it was only in a traumatic event later down the road I met the man that I would marry, and I shared with him about my abortion experience. And you know, he was wonderful, and he encouraged me to move on with my life. And I didn't want to carry that lie into my marriage, because I knew it would probably be, you know, not a very good thing to do. I remember after the abortion, I went into a toy shop one day and I bought a doll that cried. And I would love to listen to this baby crying. It was like I needed to punish myself for what I had done. And I believed at that time that every challenging event in my life that I would experience would be because of what I had done. I had, a self-imposed, I was my own judge and jury, and there was no way back from me. I'd done the unrightable wrong, really, committed the unforgivable sin. So I remember being pregnant with my first child after I got married, and the joy of that pregnancy and, you know, realizing that my little baby was going to be born very soon. But she was born, and I cannot tell you the joy I felt in my heart immediately after the birth. And remember, the first stab of pain after her birth came when somebody in the same room I was in the hospital came to me and said, "Is this your first baby?" And of course, I knew that this was not my first baby. I knew that my first baby had been aborted. So this guilt, this pain continued in my life for a number of years. And the only way to cope is like I built a wall of denial around myself. There was nothing there. And I convinced myself there was nothing there. In and out of denial, that was the only way I could cope. And of course, society helped me with that, building that wall of denial. You know, it was the best thing for you at that time. You were young. What would you have done, you know, with a baby? You would probably have given up your job. So that continued for a number of years. And it did affect my marriage. It affected how I related to my children. There was a tremendous amount of anger in my heart that would every now and then break through. And I think I often say today I was doing business with God all of the time. I was begging him not to harm my children for what I'd done, you know, just because I felt that I didn't deserve any joy. I didn't deserve any peace. I didn't deserve any happiness because of the awful thing that I had done. And I remember when my second little girl was born, when she was about a year old, she got an ear infection, which spread to her middle ear. And she had inflammation of the brain. And I remember she had to be admitted to hospital. And the doctors assured me that this, you know, after the operation, she was paralyzed down her right side. But the doctors assured me that everything would return to normal eventually, but it would be a slow process. So, of course, at that time, I in my thinking at that time, in my flawed thinking of this God that I deemed as a judge and that had made notes of everything I had done in my life, every wrong I had done, and, of course, the biggest wrong I had done in my eyes was the abortion, that I, somehow or other, I deserved this to happen. And indeed, later on in that year, my little daughter died of an infection. And for the pain in my heart, I can't tell you again, was absolutely unbelievable. And this continued for a number of years. And I became involved in work in my parish, and I was always being applauded for the good works I was doing. But really, I was doing business with God. It was like I was saying, if I do a lot of good things, perhaps he won't be so hard on me, you know. So I remember getting involved with this lovely sister in my parish and always applauding me for the good works I was doing. And I felt such a fraud. I felt such a sham. You know, if she really knew what I had done, she would literally run me out of the parish. And I remember one night sitting down and she was being particularly, praising me, applauding me. And I thought, I have to tell her. I just can't let this continue. So I remember I was really fearful because I really believed she would judge me and you know, wouldn't like me anymore. And I really valued her friendship. I think she was probably the first real friend I'd ever had. And I remember I closed my eyes and I said to her, I have something to tell you. And I began to pour out my heart to you. And she was the first human being, apart from my husband, maybe 20, 23 years before, that I'd share that with. And I told her my story. And, you know, I didn't want to open my eyes because I didn't want to see the look of condemnation in her eyes. I opened my eyes eventually and she was crying. And I remember she came and put her arms around me. And she said to me, don't waste your suffering. Let God use it for good. And that was the beginning, I think, of me turning back and realizing that maybe there was some hope for me. And later down the road, another little sister, I mean, always little sisters coming into my life helping me. I was invited to go to a meeting one night with a friend. And I remember her saying these words, you know, she was talking about mistakes we make in our lives. She knew nothing about me, I have to say. And she said, Jesus loves us, warts and all. It doesn't matter what we've done or where we've been. He loves us. And, you know, in that moment, I knew I'd been forgiven. I often say today that I literally danced with the man from Nazareth that night. I had such joy in my heart because I knew it was safe to come home. I knew that God had forgiven me. But, of course, forgiving yourself is a totally different story. That takes time. And over time, and believing and trusting and knowing that God had forgiven me, I began to realize and forgive myself. And, of course, going to meet a priest and telling him about my abortion. Mind you, I had been many times before, but would come out and for a time feel forgiven. But that would be short-lived. And I remember meeting that lovely priest, the lovely Father Gabriel. And he said to me, we'll baptize your baby now and we'll give it a name. And I said, Father, I'd like to call my baby Gabriel. So the priest baptized my baby and gave it the name of Gabriel. So that's the name of my little child who is now in heaven with the Lord. And that is the rest is history, I suppose. Down the road, I had such joy in my heart. As time went on and the process of my healing, you know, the physical damage that abortion had done, the spiritual, the Lord had forgiven me, and I knew that in my heart. But, you know, the physical damage it had done to me, the low self-esteem, that over time took time. But with my faith and trust in God, that was healed. And then I began to realize I needed to give this message to other women out there. There must be so many of them suffering in silence. So it was then that I heard about a program called Rachel's Vineyard in America. And with the help of a lovely Capuchin priest, he contacted America and so did I. And the first weekend was held in Ireland in 2003. And I have to say that this program is just absolutely wonderful. It's the work of the Holy Spirit. And I praise and thank God for the founder, Dr. Teresa Burke, a psychotherapist from the United States. And I think, facilitated over 90 retreats now, my priest tells me. I lose count. In Ireland, I can't quite remember how many, but the majority are in Ireland. But I have also gone to countries like Scotland, Malta, the Faroe Islands, the Lebanon, Korea, and hopefully Poland in the spring. And I'm just back from Hungary. And indeed, I returned to Korea in October to do a retreat with the military there. The Archbishop has invited me. So it's a clear example of how God can make miracles out of our mistakes, you know. He can use our sins to make better people out of us, I always say. So I've been sharing my story now for a number of years, maybe 15 up to 20 years, really. I began in a kind of an anonymous way, you know, writing my story but not giving my real name. And then when I felt I was ready, you know, I shared my story publicly. And many women come, and thank God that these retreats just transform the lives of the women and the men, I have to say. Men are deeply damaged by abortion. I have mothers, fathers, grandparents coming, siblings of someone, maybe a sibling who helped her sister to have an abortion or whatever. They all come to Rachel's Vineyard and all see, receive tremendous healing and go out then and be instruments of healing themselves, just like I am today.
We're speaking today within the context of a vote that's about to take place in Ireland. One of the points of this bill that's going to be voted on is that it would allow women who are exhibiting suicidal tendencies to obtain an abortion.
Yes.
Could you share your perspective?
Well, basing it on the case that they plan to legislate on, the Miss X case. Miss X was raped when she was 14, I believe, statutory rape. And the decision given was that a woman could lawfully receive an abortion if her life was at risk of suicide. So Miss X actually ended up miscarrying and never had an abortion. So the X case ruling was completely flawed. They had no medical evidence whatsoever. In the past 20 years, the mounting evidence proves that abortion is never a treatment for suicidal ideation. And there's growing evidence, and I can see it in my work with women. Many women have come to me through Rachel's Vineyard who have been raped and had abortions. And these women are totally distraught. And these women are grieving for their lost children and really regretting their decision to abort. And evidence shows, I believe there's been a book written by Dr. David Reardon in the United States called Victims and Victors. And in this he shares the stories of women who were raped and kept their babies, and women who were raped and aborted. And the women who were raped and kept their babies, the healing came through the birth of their children. You know, and there isn't the fact that they are being used to further the agenda of those who promote abortion. And as I said, I've had many women coming who've been raped. So the legislation we will be voting on today is completely unjust and cruel. It's based on the X case ruling, that, as I said, had no time limits, and this means that people may end up coming here for late-term abortions. And as you, I don't know if you know, but our government are still not allowing a conscience vote on this for our government representatives. So today we see a second vote in this Dáil, and then it'll have to go to the Senate. As I say, I see every case coming on my weekend. I also have a lot of women now coming who have been given a prenatal diagnosis saying their children will be disabled or have severe disabilities or will not live very long. And these women are grieving so badly, I have to tell you. So many of these women are suicidal. So I have had a piece of everything, you know, every different thing coming on my weekend. Women self-harming, for instance, women who've become addicted to alcohol or drugs. I visit women in psychiatric hospitals, women who are deeply, deeply damaged by abortion. So suicide is not a reason to legalize abortion, you know. Suicide is not the answer to a pregnant woman in crisis. That woman needs information, she needs help, she needs love, she needs support. I have to tell you that many young women tried to take their own lives. Indeed, after my own abortion, I sat one night and took a bottle of pills, half a bottle of pills, actually. But I woke up afterwards, thank God. But I meet them all the time, women who've tried to kill themselves, women who are self-harming after abortion. So what I feel, if this is legislated for, I am going to be so busy that I will not be able to keep up the demand to help the women and men that will be seeking help if this bill goes through.